You are all very welcome, and you are many, and I'm very pleased to see that you are many, to this EBA seminar on local peace building, challenges and opportunities. The seminar is arranged by EBA, the expert group for aid studies. And my name is Gun-Britt Andersson, and at present I am normally the vice chair of EBA, but I'm now the acting chair because we are waiting for a more permanent chair. I am the old to be that. But a few words about the expert group for aid studies. I think by now, because we have rather many participants in our seminars and in our reference groups and so on, so I think that you are many now that know about us. But for those who have not been in contact with EBA before, I would just say a few words about us before we start the seminar. The expert group for aid studies is a government committee set up to contribute to improvement of Sweden's development cooperation, development aid. And in collaboration with researchers and other experts, we analyze and evaluate Swedish international assistance. We focus primarily on overarching issues within Sweden's development cooperation, but not on individual projects. Others are doing that. And EBA defines independently the issues to be studied and examined, and the studies to be commissioned. And authors that are that are contracted to do the studies, they do that work independently. So it's double independence. We decide ourselves what we want to do, and then it's the authors that independently studies the subjects. But we always provide them with a reference group that can be in dialogue with the authors to see to quality assurance, but also relevance of the studies. It is our ambition to bridge gaps between policy, research, and practice, areas that do not always communicate sufficiently. We hope they communicate better and better. And our seminars provide a forum for dialogue and discussion of pertinent issues within development cooperation. This is also the ambition with today's seminar, where we have the pleasure of launching a report focusing on the importance task of peace building. The title of the report and the seminar is Local Peace Building, Challenges and Opportunities. And it is written by Joachim Öjendahl. He will come here, you will see them later. He's there. Hanna Leonardsson, she's here also, and Martin Lundqvist. No, he isn't here, but and they're all from the University of Gothenburg. Then the need peace building is the seminar will be moderated by Rickard Sannerholm, who is a new program manager at EBA, but he comes from the Folke Bernadotte Academy, so he has a lot of experience in this field. but a few words first. Peace building is not a simple thing. While it is one of the most important instruments for addressing crisis and fragility, it is also persistently criticized for being too state-centric and too far away from local peace-building needs and realities. The need to look beyond national and state-centered peace-building intervention is gradually receiving more and more attention internationally. And in fact, this morning, one of my expert Facebook friends, Karin Wall, she's not here, but she has been in Mali, and she has noted that the International Crisis Group has written to the Security Council to tell them that the present UN mission, everything could fail if they do not engage much deeper in various parts of the country with different sorts of local trouble. So I think that was very, very pertinent today. I expected her almost to be here. Peace building is also a priority in Swedish development assistance. The Stockholm Declaration from the International Dialogue, co-chaired by Sweden, emphasizes that any strategy for supporting transition out of fragility must be locally driven, locally owned, and locally led. In this turbulent world, this is a priority. Peace building will have to continue to be a priority. And there is also both at the national level, but also at the local level. And there are needs there that we will hear about. There are needs, there are opportunities, but also problems. And I think we'll hear about the problems you have written about them also in the report. And so IBA is today very pleased to launch a report on this very, very, very topical topic. And with those words, I wish you welcome again, and I leave the floor to Rickard.
Okay, thank you so much. Can you hear me okay? Okay, very good. So the arrangement for the seminar is pretty straightforward. And as Gunnar mentioned, we will start off with an introduction by the two out of the three authors who are present here today from the report. And I hope that most of you have picked up a copy of the report that was outside when you came in and registered. If not, please do so on your way out. And of course, it's also available online if you wish to read it and spread it in that sense. After the presentation from the authors, we will be given a comments and reflections by Aoife McCullough from the Overseas Development Institute. And this is then followed by a panel discussion where we will be joined by two further colleagues in the field, as it were. And then to also open up the discussion and engage with the whole room, all of you as participants as well. Does that sound okay as a setup? I have no plan B, so we have to do it. Okay, thank you. If you would like to use Twitter during the seminar or after the seminar or in other ways as well, engage with the EBA throughout, please use, for this seminar at least, the hashtags. Peacebuilding could be one appropriate one. Also, hashtag EBA seminar or hashtag Svepo. And our Twitter name is at EBA committee, should you feel inclined to tweet now or afterwards. So, before we kick off and invite the two authors, two out of three, I'm glad to see so many here. I think it reflects undoubtedly positively on the panelists and the authors, no doubt, but also reflects on the fact that peace building is a topic that is engaging and that it is engaging a large group of us. We live in a time where peace is at peril, where we see in far too many countries, societies, and communities where conflict has become entrenched, where we also see, and this is where you start off in the report, where conflict has become entrenched and keep occurring, and the difficulties of sustaining peace as well. And that's part of the entry point for this report. The issue that we can and should engage with peace building from a critical point of view of making sure that it is sustainable, that we can sustain peace. And that's where you start off in your report and then lead us through an unpacking of the local turn in peace building is one way of moving forward towards a more sustaining peace approach. So with that, I'll invite Joakim and Hanna to also start off our seminar and welcome up on stage.
So, good afternoon, everybody. As Rickard said, my name is Joakim Öjndahl. First of all, I should say that I'm happy to be here. We are happy to be here. And we should extend our thanks to Rickard, who has elegantly managed this process when it was closing. But I would also like to thank Jan. Where are you, Jan? Jan Pettersson? There. Who was one of those who initially believed in this idea and who's been a hero in pulling and pushing and managing the process up to recently. Thank you both. First of all, there are three authors to the report which need to be emphasized. I'm the team leader, but there wouldn't be any report if I didn't have Hanna Leonardsson, which will soon enter the stage here, and Martin Lundqvist with me. Martin couldn't be here today, unfortunately. Both PhD candidates at the School of Global Studies at Göteborg University and pursuing independent projects in post-conflict environments with a specific focus on the local turn. I have worked in this field for quite some time, and I've had the advantage or the benefit of following one case from the stage where it was genocide and civil war up to now, where very soon, 2.5 decades later, the real election, I mean, it's the fifth election, but the real election, both national and local level, has come where the dominant party may be unseated with democratic means. It's a big maybe, but anyway, we come to that point 2.5 decades later, and it's been a fantastic journey. A local turn of peace building. Peace building has turned into one of the most important activities there is in this line of work. In the early 90s, when we saw a new world order emerging, we saw a number of cases, number of countries collapsed as a result of the end of the Cold War, and we saw the UN getting a new role. They were engaging, and I think in 1995 they were engaged in 33 cases all over the world. And most of us at the time thought that it was a phase where the UN would kind of repair societies that had been faring ill during the Cold War and now needed to be put back in place. Obviously, as Gun-Britt Anderson also said, that's not the case. Peace building remains very important, remains one of the most significant and prioritized activity of basically all actors in this field. And the need for it doesn't seem to go away, rather the opposite. It should also be noted that it is a fiercely criticized activity, at least in part rightly so. In the early days, it was very much a hit and run, pursuing a lot of or using a lot of wishful thinking, not being very realistic on what could be done and what could be expected, and being quite unprepared, both in terms of methods and expectations. From academia, from research, especially from radical research, it has been fiercely criticized. It has changed, it has improved, many would say, but much of the critique remains. The local turn is, what you call, a label more than a concept in itself. It's lots of different voices inside this local turn of peace building. And I'd like to say a few words on how it's seen in academia and how it's seen in policy and in practice. In a way, critical scholars, practitioners, and policymakers agree that there is a need for a local turn. And as we heard Gun-Britt said about Mali, even practitioners are screaming out, or policymakers are screaming out and asking for more local, as many critical scholars are doing as well. However, it's not as much of a consensus as there may appear. In academia, the critique is much about scale, distance, and place. Where is it happening? How far away from the centers of power? Which size of the processes? How big are the processes? And how adapted are they? It's much about power. Who can define what is being done? Done when, how, for whom? It's a lot about agency. Who is allowed to act? Who is invited? Who is peace building actually for at the end of the day? It's about everyday peace. Is peace actually felt by people? Critical scholars would say that liberal peace in many places has been reduced to voting every fifth year, making most people not really feeling that there is either peace nor democracy that has arrived, even though the system remains in place. Many critical scholars would call for a paradigm shift, not problem solving, call for a new approach to the entire field. Policymakers and practitioners also, as I said, like the local, but it's more about strengthening local democracy. It's more about improving local governance. It's about enhancing local services like education, health, infrastructure, etc. It's about how to channel resource and resource flow to local levels, how to manage local projects. It's about how to improve capacity building in local level. And with all this, I would like to say that the critique is, how should we call it, philosophical. It's radical, and it's trying to target the very core of the activity and question whether it is pursued in the right way. Many policymakers, by necessity, are bound by the reality they are facing, are working on it on a different kind of level. So although there is a consensus in the field, I'd say there isn't a real consensus. And this is our justification for doing this. A frustration to, on the one hand, moving around in academic circles where the critique is fierce and broad-based. On the other hand, also moving around in policy circles where another kind of discourse is pursued, sometimes under the same label. When we did this, when we started this project, process, report, we felt a need for exposing, balancing, and bridging between, for instance, the often benign rhetorics. Everybody likes the local, right? But also the more sluggish practice. We heard good words, good talk about localization, but we didn't see so much of it. We needed to bridge between the idea of national ownership and local imperatives. Sometimes the national and the local is even mixed, which have devastating effects, we would say. We felt the need to bridge between what I just mentioned, the academic critique and the policy as usual that we saw out there. We felt the need to bridge between isolated localism. There are lots of very good projects out there which are very, very good in themselves, but has little to do in the bigger scheme of things. So we needed to bridge between isolated localism and more comprehensive state building. And we wanted to see if we could make some kind of link between wishful thinking, which perhaps the radical critique is wishful thinking, and more realistic goals that we are pursuing in the real world, so to speak. So, more formally, more concrete, the aim of the report are threefold. We wanted to present a theoretical overview of the developments in peace-building literature pertaining to what is commonly known as the local term. It seeks to assess the impact or the lack thereof of these theoretical developments on the actual practices of peace-building. And finally, it seeks to gauge the potential of the local term to change peace-building practices for the better. I would say, to the best of my knowledge, that the problematique, the critique that is outlined against peace building as usual under the banner of local turn is rather spot on in many ways. It is correct, it's substantial, it is knowledgeable. However, there is very few solutions being produced within this debate on the local turn. It is, as Gumbrit said, peace-building is a very complex undertaking, and it's easy to criticize. But what do we do with all this critique? How can the local turn be advancing peace-building? Okay, with this I have introduced the process. Now Hanna will talk more about the report itself.
Okay, I hope you can hear me. I woke up this morning without almost no voice. It's better, although not great. All right, so this study has done a review of policy development and academic literature in relation to a local turn of peace building. We have studied four cases, Cambodia, Rwanda, Somaliland, and Liberia. And these cases are in no way similar, which is also one of the basic points of the local turn. No cases are. They have some similarities. Cambodia and Rwanda are more long-term peace-building processes. Somaliland and Liberia are maybe more in the making as we speak. Cambodia and Liberia have had big UN interventions for peace-building, whereas Rwanda and Somaliland have had less of that. In this group, Somaliland is maybe a bit more of an exception, if there's such a case in the local turn where all cases are different, as it is not an international recognized state. It is a region within Somalia that seeks international recognition as a state, but hasn't gotten it yet. For all these four cases, we have five analytical aspects that we look at. We look at the inclusion of the local in the peace agreement from the beginning, the start of peace in relation to the conflict that they have all suffered from. We look at how the local has grown gradually in peace building. We assess the contribution of the local to sustainability of the peace achieved in each of the cases. So contribution to a sustainable peace. In addition, we look at two aspects, which is the gender aspect and civil society aspect in each of these cases. So what we arrive at in the report, looking at all each case individually, Cambodia is a case where the local was not included, not thought of at all at the beginning of the peace agreement, but it has grown over time. And it also is a partial success of the local, because the localization of peace has created a gateway for stabilizing peace in Cambodia. Or it will be seen with the upcoming elections that Joachim talked about, if this is the case, if it's sustainable for the future, even if there are national uncertainties. Rwanda has had a very great localized peace building in terms of creating their own process of peace building. The Gacaca courts that were greatly built on traditional ideas of justice and reconciliation. They have had a decentralization process, creating local governments. But it's also a localization of peace, which is highly centralized in that it is owned by the national government. So even though there are institutions, local institutions present, their room for maneuver is more controlled than in the Cambodian case. Somaliland, being a little bit of an exception or a region instead of a state in international terms, has not been excluded from international support in recent years, but the creation of peace was very much based on negotiations between traditional and local groups, local elites. This has meant that they have created a very much homegrown system for peace building. And it took them time. It took them 7 years to get there. So it's been a negotiated peace between local actors. It has, in terms of including the local, it has great legitimacy. But at the other hand, it's also a peace that is constructed on traditional values, meaning that they might not be emancipatory in the way that we talk about the inclusion of women. They are included, but in roles that are traditional and accepted according to traditional values. And also civil society has had a role. It has had a role in terms of mobilizing towards tensions that might have arisen. But it is questionable whether their role as actors can be sustained now that they are maybe moving into a different phase, a phase that is stable, but is facing different, more developmental challenges instead of conflictual challenges. Liberia is a case where we can clearly see this, that the local has been equal to the national. The national government has had a very strong ownership of the process. They have willingly invited international actors to take part in the peace-building process, but many it is said that it's a peace-building process that does not get out of Monrovia. So local partners in a centralized peace, in terms of centralized as international, but also when it does get out of the capital, it gets down to a subnational level, which is what we more look at when we're assessing the local. It is participatory local peace building, meaning that participation does not necessarily mean the power to create peace building programs. You can be part of it, but you might not be the one who is leading it. Some lessons we have picked out from the cases. The first one is that the national local, as in there are so many policy reports and papers and also academic papers that talk about a local peace building, but really are talking about the national government. The local does not get beyond the national, below the national government. Or, as I said in the case of Liberia, the local are participants. They are not part of creating peace-building policies, peace-building programs. But also in the cases where we have seen successful local peace-building, it has grown over time. It has taken 25 years in Cambodia. It has taken a lot of time. It is not something that you create overnight. So allow it to grow has been one of the lessons from the report. And it is important. It is important to sustainable peace. Maybe the case of Cambodia has come to a place where we might see in, I don't know when the election is.
Local one is now in June.
The local is now, but the national?
Next year.
So maybe next year we will know whether the local level, local democracy, might be able to contain stability in a country where the national level is quite unstable. It does have problems. It has great problems. In the case of maybe excluding women, civil society, other non-local elite actors, for example, or in cases where you might do something really, really good locally, but it does not spread. It does not connect to other levels of the society or other actors within the local arena. And as we've seen, it can be an avenue for gender equality. Rwanda is such a case. We all know that they are very great, good on gender equality and civil society participation. But it may also be questioned whether this is an avenue for gender equality and civil society participation. So the local is diverse, complex, but really, really important. Okay, so in terms of policy implications that we have to come out of this report, there are a number of practical implications, which implies to define who, where, or what the local is, or where the locals are, as they are different, they are messy, they are several actors. You need to know who you're dealing with, or what set of different actors are the alternatives, or you could, or potentially could be beneficiaries. And even though in many of these cases the local has not been included early on, we do see the importance of including it from the very start. Of the peace, in the peace agreement, as that sets off the structure of the peace-building operation that is to come, but also in other arenas. So include it early on and allow it to grow with time. And including the local in a bigger picture. Doing something local can be really good. It can be the best project ever. But if it's not connected to other levels of the society, to other actors locally, it might actually go the other way. You might create something really good for one community, and instead of creating a good development in the whole local community, you might be creating animosity between groups. But more of the critical implications that come from this critical view of peacebuilding, critical literature of peacebuilding, is that we need to allow for flexibility and adaptations of aid programs and to local contexts. So there's a need to learn about the context, as it says in the next point, and be able to adapt. Learn, adapt, learn, adapt, learn, adapt. And very important in this is to not see peacebuilding as something that is predefined and linear. There is no natural way between war and peace. It can take different routes, and it might be different from case to case. So overarching implications for the whole aid are more about, because you need to be able to do flexible programs, adaptable, learn about the context beforehand and during, because it might change, there's a need for more administrative and monitoring resources. Doing smaller projects, there needs to be an ability to do smaller projects, but also to monitor them. So doing only large scale because they are easy to monitor is not doing a local turn. Allow for risks, because it might be risky. It might not have this result that you foresaw. It might have a different one. It might have a good one, but different. It might also have a really bad result. But that is part of allowing some of the ownership to the local arena and allowing it to evolve over time. And in that case, having contextual knowledge, project monitoring, feedback loops, and the preparedness to revise, adapt, and relaunch are central features for working with the local turn.
Okay, and don't worry, there is just one slide left. And actually, Hannah concluded the report, but we did get a question at some point. So why doesn't that happen? Why doesn't this happen? There is some kind of consensus on that it's needed, and that we have a problem we need to solve. And of course, that is a tricky question, but the dilemma, trying to find what is the core problem, actually making it happen. And I throw in two attempts at phrasing this in two different sentences. And I think that a local turn is imperative for sustainability, but to succeed, some practices quite distanced from established practices may be needed. We're talking about quality control, administrative resources, risk-taking, etc. There's quite a lot in the aid machinery which is not geared towards a wild and messy and complex local. And since I couldn't just find one core, I had one more sentence. And that is that a local turn may require not only regular development cooperation going local, that is not necessarily just more of the same, but that some fundamentals are rethought and reconsidered, which they are, of course, up for debate and something which we could talk about more in the remaining of this seminar. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you so much, Joachim and Hannah. Thank you for ending with a dilemma, something for us to pick up on, at least in the immediate part when it comes to comments and reflections, and then for the panel as well. I was thinking of the exposing, balancing, and bridging as a common theme for an aim and ambition for the report and study. As a segue leading into the next section,